and our legal advisor is going to speak specifically to the key recommendations that we would like to make. But just as an introduction, Chairperson, on November 2008, FIDUSA's Congress passed a resolution that we must address this particular challenge of the exploitation, the oppression, and the abuse of our workers in all the sectors by labor brokers and by temporary employment agencies. We also discovered at that stage that this thing is not just a South African challenge, but it's also a global challenge. After that, Chairperson, we passed a resolution. We saw light at the end of the tunnel when the African National Congress released the manifesto. And when we studied the manifesto, we then necessitated us to ask the ANC president at that stage to brief the NEC of FIDUSA about the intention of the ANC. And on the 20th of April 2009, we had a discussion with him at our offices, and he gave us his impressions how we see this problem must be addressed, and Leon will deal with some of those things. But Chairperson, we didn't stop there. We've also embarked on an international study tour. We visited the Netherlands, Germany, France. We've also met with the Trade Union Advisory Committee to the OECD in Paris. We've also went to Belgium, and we met with the Belgian trade unions and the employees in that country. And then after that, we went to meet with the people that deal with Convention 182 at the ILO. We only have to do one more country, and that's America, and it's our intention to go to the United States to meet with the American Staff Association and also with the American Federation of Labor and a Congress of Industry Organization. And we look forward to meet with them between the 10th and the 18th when they have their Congress, so that we can also see what lessons we can learn from them, how they have managed to tackle this particular problem. We've also had some engagements with the South African Confederation of Trade Unions, SACOTU, two of which NACTU and FIDUSA is members, and at that under SACOTU, we have also adopted a resolution that deals with the issue of labor brokers and the bucket brigade. We have also, in our work on dealing with this matter, signed a memorandum of understanding to promote decent work with CAPES. And the purpose of this agreement is a similar agreement that was signed with that the European unions have also signed with the employer bodies in Europe. And Leon is going to deal with that particular issue also. And then we've also met with Claudia Weinkopf. She's a doctor from Germany that wrote her doctorate on the thing of temporary employment agency. From our side, we are prepared to share with the committee all the research material that we have collected and gathered over a period of about 12 months. And then Leon is just going to specifically speak to the specific proposals regarding how do we see this process take forward and what we most probably would like to recommend to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I can just check, we did make submissions and submitted on the 21st. The submissions consist of the submission itself, then a copy of the memorandum of understanding that Dennis has referred to, as well as a summary of the comparison that we've done with different European countries. I think we want to start off to say that there's a lot of emotions that goes along with this subject, and the 2 days, I think you can testify to that. But we can choose to focus on all the atrocities, or we can choose to focus on all the outperformers in this industry. There's, to our mind, from the producer side, good and bad examples of bad and good brokers, of bad and good employers, and that we as trade unions deal with each and every day. As many as you have bad examples of employers, you have examples of good employers as well. But the business position then is that with enough respect, trust, the will to work things out, and the willingness to talk, and that will provide a cornerstone that we can actually use as building blocks between our social dialogues between the parties.
Now, producer has on record that we are willing to accept more flexibility in the labour market, as well as temporary employment services, as important players and partners in this market, in exchange, and I emphasize this, in exchange for better conditions for temporary employment service workers. In essence, producer believes that temporary employment service workers have the right to decent work, and that temporary employment agents can add value and ensure employment in South Africa. We refer to you to the rapid growth of that of the labour broker sector, and it's taken out of the Department of Labour's source from Trump. But, Chair, we can rightfully ask the question, is this rapid growth because of the employers bypassing labour rights, and we've had reference to that, by outsourcing core labour activities to a third party, in other words, that sort of disguised relationship, despite the introduction of new labour laws that were designed to protect the rights of workers, or because there is a real demand for this kind of service that the temporary employment services are offering? Producer believes that it is both. So there is a reason for bypassing the labour laws, and there is a real demand. There is no doubt that the test plays an enormous role in job creation in the world. In South Africa, and you've heard it, figures about 500,000 temps are placed on a daily basis, and it facilitates employment for about 2 million job seekers per annum. In Europe, to our what we've witnessed, very much the same is happening. But, interesting enough, both in Europe and here, the test only represents about 4% of the total workforce in South Africa, so we're not really looking at huge percentage-wise. Then one can ask yourself, are 500,000 people forced by circumstances beyond their control? And no doubt you've listened to examples yesterday and today about individuals and their contribution to this experience. But are we really going to believe that 500,000 people are forced by circumstances beyond their control to be in a temporary employment environment? Or is there real support for this kind of placement by a part of South African workforce? Producer believes that the test provides real support for a portion of the employment market that wants flexibility and temporary assignments. First-time work seekers, part-time students, women that have particular needs in respect of family obligations, older persons who do not want permanent placements, and other groups of people with specific needs or specialized qualifications or experience all find the real benefits from temporary employment or placements or assignments. Therefore, test provides workplace skills. And I'm not going to repeat what either have said, but there is ample evidence to substantiate that. Vocational skills, learnerships, and work experience to thousands of individuals in a diverse manner. And in most instances, test also serves as the first point of entry for school leavers into the world of work. So we find that what we've witnessed was that test is normally the first to benefit from increased economic activity in a country, but it's also then also the first to be negatively affected by economic downturn, and that is also borne out by the European experience. Now, finally, this contributes about 23 billion to the South African economy. So we therefore believe that this can add value to the world of work. What is the problem then? And you've been asking this question, and some of your parliamentary members here have asked this question. Give us answers to that. If there's a place then for test, and if test adds value to the labour market, what then is the problem? Producer believes that the problem lies with the end user. Now, we've had examples this morning of the end user being the real problem, not the labour broker, but the end user. So if the end user, the real employer then, makes use of temporary workers for reasons that are unethical, unacceptable, not economically or financially sound, or use temps to replace permanent workers, and we'll be addressing you on that, or for financial gain, it is wrong, and that abuse should be addressed. Now, the ANC recognized this, and Dennis did refer you to that, and I would just quote you out of the ANC manifesto, and I quote, in order to avoid the exploitation of workers and ensure decent work for all workers, as well as to protect the employment relationship, we aim to introduce laws to regulate contract work, subcontracting and outsourcing, address the problem of labour brokering, and prohibit certain abusive practices. And I stress prohibit certain abusive practices. And that is a direct reference in relation to the problem lies with the end user.
And that is what we believe you actually referred to and what was confirmed by President Zuma when he addressed us. Now, if you then look at regulating of the test industry, we believe it should be regulated, not banned. Why do we say that? Because if you ban this industry, all that happens is you will have the end user thinking up ingenious ways of bypassing the existing labor laws. It's easy to do that. You will find the end user introducing temporary work contracts instead of the labor broker placing the people. You will just have the end user introducing temporary work arrangements. And it's not, we've had examples of that in Germany when they stopped their regulation in 2003. So it's not uncommon. So there's examples of regulation that we can find in most European countries. And we can share with, as Dennis indicated to you, all our experiences there. But we just want to refer you to the ABO agreement, for instance, in Netherlands, which covers about 90% of the test workers. And another fine example is a national level agreement in the United Kingdom between the government, the Trade Union Council, TUC, and the CBI, conducted in May 2008. And we can make that available to you. So what we are saying is that regulation can be done and effected in one of two ways. You can have a national legislative framework supplemented by collective agreements, or you can have a national framework agreement, typically brokered at NetLAC, supplemented by sector or industry agreements, as we find now, for instance, in your Metal Engineering Bargaining Council, specifically aiming at certain circumstances in your metal industry. But no matter which one South Africa chooses, the real issue will not be regulation alone. And you've had also people focusing on that, but also the enforcement of regulation. And unless you have a system of Department of Labor enforcement system supplemented by either enforcement agencies through bargaining councils or another form of enforcement agency, it will be meaningless. Because the real test comes in the monitoring and enforcement of whatever is put in place, be that through national legislation, be that through proper collective agreement, the whole issue boils down to one thing, and that's enforcement. And one very good example we found was in Netherlands, where they've got not only enforcement agencies, but the ability to impose fines. Not only enforcement, but fines as well. You've had calls here for criminalization and jail sentences imposed. I think that is going too far. But if you have a fine system, there's deterrent, and you have a financial means as well to force or to finance the enforcement agency. Dennis has referred to the co-determination, the MOU between ourselves and CAPES, and you can go through that at your leisure. But in essence, the regulation must be seen to be twofold. Number one, there must be administrative regulations, meaning the registration, the licensing, the compliance, the adherence and respect of code of ethics, and then penalties, meaning deregistration or fines to ensure that there is proper enforcement and adherence to whatever is in the administrative regulation. And then you've got regulation to deal with workplace issues. That's a regulation of working hours, equal treatment, period of placement, number of rollovers, take-back clauses, all those things that we've actually heard a mouthful over the last 2 days. So the administrative regulations can be dealt with within a statutory framework and through a tripartite regulatory body such as the CCMA governing body are composed of whatever else you need to compose of, but it can be a tripartite regulatory body. Workplace issues and the regulation thereof is more complex, but in our opinion it should be regulated through a very broad legislative framework supplemented by collective agreements between the social partners. In 2008, the report of the European Foundation for the Improvement of Living and Working Conditions, and more specifically a report in respect of the temporary agency work and collective bargaining in the European Union. It's quite a thick document. It was a study done by the University of Michigan, and they actually looked at most of the issues that we are grappling with in South Africa, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. They've looked at, for instance, the reasons for using the test, the duration of assignment, the numbers of people that must be employed, the sector or occupation in which tests can be employed, strikes, the use, and one gentleman referred to the use of scab labor for labor, temporary employment people to break strike. The operating or the stipulated business activities, you can have restricted use in certain sectors or industries. The forms of temporary work contracts, in other words, you can concentrate on the contract contents. The social security aspects, equal treatments, pay differentials, training, education, vocational training skills, other conditions of employment, representation of workers, workplace black practices, the right to organize and belong to unions, and enforcement and sanctions. Now, all we from South Africa need to do is to look at best practices from all of those that the study already has indicated. But with a word of caution, Chair, there's no way that we can import any of this just as a 197 transfer into South African conditions. We've got to be cautious that the European countries have a far more superior social security system. They've got other state benefits such as free public transport, housing, health service, education. So we must be cautious that whatever we look at and take our guidance from examples of best practices, we must also caution ourselves that we must do it in a South African context. Now, if you look then at issues under consideration in NECLAC, the Department of Labour actually tabled a discussion document at NECLAC. I will deal with four issues to our mind, which is very important. Number one, we've been asking the 2 days now, who is the employer? So we ask, who is the true employer? The labour broker or the end user company? The issue can be addressed by either determining that a labour broker or the end user is the employer. And we've got examples in Europe that they've done certain instances, they've made a temporary employment agency the employer, in certain instances they made the end user, and in certain other countries like Netherlands, they've introduced a model of what they call joint liability, meaning they hold both accountable, the labor broker that places and the end users that receives that. And they have a co-liability. So they have a co-responsibility to ensure adherence to whatever is in collective agreements or in legislation, and they are both penalized if there is no adherence to that. And from our side, fiduciary favors the joint liability model because it holds both parties accountable and will not make that one blames the other one and the other one blames the other one, but both are responsible and accountable. It will also solve the problem in the CCMA cases because there will be a direct link to the arbitrary take-back clause, and we will refer to the arbitrary take-back clause a little bit later. Equal treatment. We believe that a temporary worker should not be worse off than a permanent employee when placed, and we've had examples of people being exploited in that way. And it therefore means, Chair, that a temporary worker cannot be placed on wages or remuneration that are less than the minimum of the applicable post. And this is where the challenge comes from, because people sometimes don't have understanding that you have job grades, you have job scales or salary scales, and with a minimum and a maximum. And people in permanent employment might find themselves somewhere on the salary scale, not necessarily at the minimum of the scale. What we believe from our side is that these temporary workers should be placed on a minimum of that applicable scale. So there is real value, and there is an insurer that there is equal pay for equal work that are being done. If one look at the examples in the industry, I'm referring to MIBC agreement, that you cannot place temporary employment people on a scale or on levels of remuneration lower than the industry agreed minimum. And social benefits is a little bit more difficult because what do you refer to if you refer to social benefits? Do you refer to your legislative social benefits, in other words, your UIF and skills levies and things like that that can be legislated, enforced through appropriate dole mechanisms, or referring to other social benefits like pension, retirement fund, medical aid contributions, because to our mind we find that a lot of permanent employees don't have access to medical aid or to retirement provisions as well. So one must be very careful how you focus on social benefits, and we've got a lot of examples which were very interesting examples that we were exposed to. For instance, that you have a joint pool that everybody contributes to, and that people then are remunerated out of when they are in between placements, or they have a pool that they pay into and eventually can reap the benefit in terms of retirement provision on that.
The period of placement, this is a very big issue and a very complicated one. To our mind, most properties are most difficult to regulate. Netherlands, for instance, have regulated by introducing three periods between placements, where the third period is then a permanent contract. But we found, even there, where it's highly regulated, there's expectation because if there's a break between the second period of temporary placement and the third one of 3 weeks, the period starts from the first period again. So they never get to the permanent contract. And we believe that if from our side we have some sort of legislative restrictions on the first period of placement, and we're not set on a certain period, but say for instance a 12-month period, with an additional allowance to have one rollover, in other words, an additional temporary placement for an additional period of 5, 6 months, 9 months, whatever else, but that you have a legislator in. And if there's still a need for that post after that 18 months or 2 years or 15 months, doesn't really matter what period we're looking at, that post then become permanent, and whoever is in that post must either be placed as a permanent employee or the post must be advertised and there must be proper competition for that post. That then brings us also to what else must be regulated in terms of this. And what we must guard against is that you place temporary people in permanent posts. We've had examples, and we've had yesterday and today reference to agricultural, but I can tell you that from our side, we've had exposure to SAA, manipulating the system, placing temporary people in permanent cabin crew positions. So we intervened and we said, but you have a constant need for X number of permanent cabin crew positions. You cannot fill that position with temporary people. And eventually we've reached an agreement to phase that out and to replace the temporary people with permanent people. So we need to look at the definition for what is regarded as a temporary position and what is then regarded as a permanent position. And we've got an example, for instance, again in the MIBC to say there's a need for a post after a certain period, it is regarded as a permanent post. Then a right to belong to a trade union and a right to bargain collectively. Sadly, we agree with the sentiments exposed or expressed here, and that is only 3% of all the temporary workers belong to a union, not only here, but overseas as well. And the main difficulty there is, number one, it's difficult to recruit those people. Number two, it's difficult then to organize those people because they are placed in different workplaces. And no matter how you define the workplace, if you don't have access to people, if you don't have right to organize people, you do not have the ability to bargain collectively and to represent adequately. So we need to look at ways of establishing a model that ensures more access from the union side and the ability to properly organize in this industry. Then what I refer to as the arbitrary take-back clause, whatever else can be referred to as arbitrary dismissals, and that is that the labor broker are merely informed by the end user, and I'm going back to the practices perpetrated by the end user, that the person is no longer wanted in that company. Be that because he propagates unionism, be that because he questions certain labor practices by the end user, but there's an arbitrary take-back clause that just says, take that person back, I don't want him in my workplace anymore, without any proper procedure, without any proper right or recourse to the CCMA, and we believe that should be addressed in such a way that there must be a speedy dispute resolution mechanism introduced that can address this on very much in the same way that the Labor Relations Act now deals with probation. So there must be at least a formal inquiry, a formal reason why the person needs to be taken back, and a recourse to be reinstated or to be replaced at the end user. Conclusions, then, Chair, and I believe this is just the four areas that is, at this stage, been identified by DOL. The bill is being drafted. I believe there is going to be more comprehensive focus on various other issues, and the producer therefore reserve its right to raise and to comment on those issues raised in the bill at a later stage. But in conclusion, producer calls for effective registration and monitoring of temporary employment agencies and the proper enforcement of the regulation as agreed upon.
We support establishment of a regulatory framework and decent work as defined by the ILO. We recognize that the ILO Convention 181 on private employment agencies and its accompanying recommendations 188 provides a framework that allows for the improved functioning of the labor market inter alia by ensuring the role of the private employment agencies is secure but also properly regulated. And all of this above, from outside we believe, can be achieved within the context of proper and disciplined social dialogue so as to combine adequate protection, regulated working and employment conditions for temporary employees and proper conditions for operations of temporary employment agencies. So we believe there's a place for both. We understand that we need to address the misuses by the end user, but we believe there is a proper place for the tech industry and that it do add value, provided there is proper regulation to further, number one, administrators, number two, focus on workforce place issues. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Now we have two reports. The one that we had before lunch and this one. Now, can I ask questions and direct them to the two different presenters? So that's the only thing that we can do now. Another floor list.
My question is to the representative of CAPES. I just want to understand the proposal. Both of these presentations have some interesting ideas, and I think there's a lot of merit. They're not quite the same, though. There's some distinct differences here. The presentation by CAPES, I beg your pardon, speaks about a regulatory board. I want to understand the nature of this board. Is it similar to the board known as the State Agency Affairs Board, which regulates the activities of the state agency? Kind of a board made up of representatives of the industry who then police their industry on behalf of the public, I think in the case of the State Agency Affairs Board. But in your particular case, is it a similar board that you have in mind, where representatives of industry police the industry on behalf of the public or on behalf of, perhaps in this case, the employee who needs a form of protection? How exactly do you anticipate that working? I know that it's just a proposal at this stage, but I would like to dig a little bit further into that and try to understand exactly what the intention is. It may very well be a good suggestion, or it may end up being a bad one, depending on exactly what you mean by that, and I'd like to understand that a little bit further. I think I'm going to just leave the question there for now. Thank you.
Okay. That question is for Kate. And the app? Yes. Please.
There are three questions from me, Madam Speaker. To my colleagues from PEDOSA, I will try my level best to ask my questions in a proper and disciplined social dialogue manner, whatever that means. Firstly, I want to get clarity because I thought I heard the General Secretary saying that this represents a position of SACOTU, which is a combination of NATU and FEDOSA. Now, I know that the leadership of NATU is here, so it would be nice just to get a clarity that is this a position of SACOTU, which is NATU and FEDOSA. The second question, I don't want to comment about the processes of a Congress resolution and then a research that happens thereafter. But basically, my question is related to the research that was done. It's unfortunate that we are not told whether we were comparing apples with apples. It was going to be nice for us to hear what is the unemployment rate
of Netherlands, for example, of Germany, for example, is it comparable to the unemployment rate in South Africa? Are those TESs in those countries having an army of unemployed people? That would be interesting to hear. But also the social benefits, I think towards the end they commented about the social benefits. It would be nice to get exactly what kind of social benefits do people have in those countries so that we may compare apples with apples. Thank you, Shepard.
I think the both Pedusa and Nastuk and Chief can answer the first question. Can people want to ask questions, put their hands up so that we can take the names? The two questions, one is for Pedusa and one is for Kate. So can they please answer? Kate.
Madam Chair, the common...
Can we see the hands? Why is this case is giving questions, but we want to take the names of the people. It's not nice to say, you know.
Madam Chair, the composition of the board that we are proposing to deal with the regulation of this industry, the nature of that board, triangular to be tripartite, where the industry will be represented, labor, organized labor will be represented, including the government. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to respond, SACOSU has adopted a resolution on labor brokers and to say that that industry should be regulated. And then, but this is a producer resolution that we also have our own resolution on to say that the industry must be regulated. Thank you.
See, the social benefits, there is a table of comparison that we attached to the presentation, so I'm not going to repeat that. But there is a difference even between Netherlands, your Belgium, your German, and your France unemployment, but roughly it's 4.6 for Netherlands, 7.9 for Belgium, 7.7 for Germany, and 9.3 for France, compared to our higher unemployment. And that's why, Chair, I was qualified to say that one can look at best practices, because not one of these countries have actually chosen to regulate and to deal with tests in the same way. The way that Netherlands deal with it and Belgium deal with it is totally different from how Germany deals with it. Germany, for instance, deregulated in 2003, and now they find that there is huge problems. To such an extent, they are thinking of introducing regulation again. In France, it's very much regulated by agreements between the employers, or the employers' organizations and the trade unions. The same with Belgium, where the placements are regulated by collective agreements and not by legislation, by national legislation. Whilst in the Netherlands, they've got that national legislated 3 months or three period of placement. I'm not going to go through this comprehensively because it is attached to our comparison or to our document. What I did say was that there is a huge difference between the social benefits of Europe and South Africa. That's why we cannot simply just take whatever is the best practice over there, but we can learn from what other countries have already been grappling with, how they dealt with this, what was successful, what was not successful. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel totally for South Africa, but we've got to keep in mind that the social security net is far superior to South African social security.
Thank you, Madam Chair. just, in fact, it's a response to the issue of criticizing us on the issue of the resolution. Firstly, we do have the submission as NATO for this hearing. And secondly, we have had discussions on the issue with Sedusa without any resolution at the end. Thirdly, we have had a discussion with COSATU on this issue recently, of last week, where we came to a conclusion that we will have to make submissions. I just want to put it there in practice. And I think our position is quite clear in terms of our main part. I just wanted to correct that. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine is just, an inquiry on the part of CAPES on their presentation. Maybe if they can just clarify our minds on one or two issues. For the greater part of the day here, we've heard from them and some of their allies a presentation on co-regulation, co-determination. Now, we want them to put this thing in context. In the case of South Africa, the co-determination model they are talking about is drawn largely from Europe and in particular from Germany. But co-determination or co-regulation doesn't happen below minimum standards. It happens above minimum standards. Now, in the case where we don't have compliance with minimum standards in South Africa, how is co-regulation going to be effective? Because it happens about minimum. We've had accounts here of workers who don't have collective bargaining rights. We've had accounts here of trade unions that whose rights are not being recognized, or at least of labor brokers who are not honoring or respecting the rights of trade unions. So you can't have co-determination in an environment where minimum standards are not being complied with. So we just want clarification from them as to how they envisage this thing to apply. The second point we want to raise, Comrade Chair, is that this thing about deregulation has also been experimented with in other contexts. In the context of Uruguay, for instance, they attempted deregulation, they made the labor market flexible, but then what they realized is that the right to collective bargaining, the wage shares of workers deteriorated, the conditions of workers deteriorated to an extent that Uruguay then reversed the deregulation policy. So there are, veritable experiences of where deregulation hasn't worked. And the reason why the Uruguayan government did that is because they could see that some of the important socio-economic indicators in their country were deteriorating. Now, are they motivating for us to experiment with things that have failed in other contexts? And then my last question to them is that Ivo Blumenthal made a presentation here, and he said that we made an error 15 or so years ago when we introduced Section 198. He, coming from your side, said that it was an error. And what he is proposing is that what he said, in fact, was that we decriminalized employers who are operating outside of the minimum standard. And his motivation is that let's correct that error and let's criminalize the best efforts in the industry. But we have yet to hear from the people who are operating in the industry their perspective on the submission made by somebody who is, who apparently they are, cooperating with in terms of his own theater. And then lastly, Chair, I think we must ask the question, what implications do these temporary employment agencies have for our own socio-economic development? A week ago, we had an interaction with the Minister of Trade and Industry, and BUSA, the federal, you know, business agency, made a submission there that they feel that if South Africa does not improve its technical compliance standards in terms of training, in terms of skills, the industrial competitiveness and the trade competitiveness of this country is going to go down. Effectively saying that they do not believe that the quality of training that is happening in the CETAs and the quality of training that is being provided by some of you know, the trainers or the temporary employment agencies that we heard about this morning is not up to standard. And because these issues are going to become WTO standards, you might find that in the long run, whatever we produce in this country, whatever we want to export, will not comply, and the country's development is going to go down as a result. So I think we need to take a very broad and patriotic approach to these things as to what are we really trying to do here. This is not a punitive exercise. This is not a vindictive exercise. It's taking account of our common interest and nationhood as a country. Thank you.
May I respond, sir? To the gentleman? I just want to say that Germany is not an example of co-regulation. It is one of the examples of deregulation that did not work, like Uruguay. An example of co-determination or co-regulation, you can find it in Netherlands, you can find it in Belgium, and it's two models that work very well. But Germany is not an example of proper deregulation or co-determination. Jay, your Labor Relations Act is not criminalized. Your Basic Conditions of Employment Act is not criminalized. Your Occupational Health and Safety Act is not criminalized. Your UIF Act is not criminalized. It is makes provision for enforcement and effective enforcement by the Department of Labor. And that's why we argue that it's senseless to argue as was done by the CETA to criminalize these things, because it is, you can make any act. The problem comes with the proper enforcement. We don't send people to jail anymore for civil death. How can we criminalize this kind of thing? But you can have a proper termination of regulation and remove the offenders out of the system by not renewing the license, deregulating them, and imposing fines on them. Then you have a proper system of regulation.
Thank you. There's a question, or there's a question or a comment from Nyakemba. The last time owner of Nyakemba is going to be Mr. Stemmel.
Thank you very much, Chair. To Kate first, there was reference made to a number of sections of the Employment Equity Act. If I did capture it correctly, it was the reference was to Section 54 of the Employment Equity Act and 198 of the LRA, 24 of the FDA, also clubbed with Section 82 of the Basic Conditions of the Employment Act. My understanding, these sections, They point to different things, which are totally different. But the presentation was in a way that these sections, they do talk to each other. I will make an example. The 54 of the Employment Equity Act is talking about the code of practice, which can be enacted by the minister. Just in fact, it's just two sections. Subsection 2 is with A and B. I don't understand how does that fit to their presentation. I would like to get clarity there, Madam Chair. The second point is, in the presentation you made reference to 500 workers that are signed each and every day across sectors. Obviously, when you said that, I then said to myself, oh, very big employer. More than you combine government with all spheres and you look at the multinationals and combine them, then that means CAPES really is serious in the business of employment. What kind of these jobs that are referring to? I'm taking this on the basis of previous presentations of you guys placing people on permanent positions, temporary positions. Can you explain yourself on this? The other point, Madam Chair, is that you made mention that you have signed approximately 20,000 learners, but you said are registered. I think there's a number of issues involved with learnership, and our experience is that most employers, when they talk training, they run to learnership because it's just for a period of a year, 12 months, then thereafter they can go and get money from the National Skills Fund. Now, and the FDA is very clear in terms of the agreement that has to be signed between the learner, the employer, and the training provider. Which role are you playing in these three areas that I've mentioned? I'm raising this because training of the leadership for that matter, in leadership, the combination of theory and practice. Now, how do you do it without having, and this word will always come, without having means of production? Because when you train workers, in order for them to grow and understand different operations, in order for them to acquire skills. How do you do this? The question to Fedusa. You see, you have done something good because you are quoting the manifesto of the ANC. And I'm coming from the ANC. Thanks for that. But I think I must say your interpretation is wrong. If you interpret what the ANC says in its manifesto when it comes to outsourcing, subcontracting, prohibiting the abuse of labor broking, then your interpretation is incorrect. Because I don't want us to go to an English dictionary to look at what prohibit means. But in the manner in which you made the point to me, it's like you were saying the ANC agrees with what you said. That's incorrect. I must repeat, the acting director general of the Department of Labor, the submission that he has made at NEDLA, it was presented to this portfolio committee. And one critical lack of that presentation is job security. And I just find something, Madam Chair, because I've just looked at these deep books, this book. When you look for something, you get something else. I happen to find a definition of an employer under the Employment Equity Act. And the definition of the employer excludes the labor program. But however, the discussion since yesterday, even before yesterday, in our own meeting, maybe it's because our journalists are offered, we don't look at each and every definition of this legislation. But I did find that. What do you say on that? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nyakemba. Can both Kate and Sedusa give some responses to questions that have been asked? Sedusa?
Chairperson, look, the ANC president had a meeting with us, and we did discuss the manifesto, but I'm not at liberty now, you know, because it's not going to be ethical for me to quote my president, what he told me, and what the Honourable Member of Parliament want me to give the interpretation. So maybe when we are alone over a cup of coffee, you know, then we can really go into that. But I don't think it's going to be ethical for me as General Secretary to ask a further comment on that particular matter, because we had a meeting, it was an open meeting, and it was recorded, and therefore maybe we can just deal with the matter on a bilateral basis. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe just to answer the one. The kind of jobs, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of case, but our experience in the sectors that we organize in is the placement takes place from a general worker to clerks, to accountants, to auditors, to miners, to construction workers, to artisans, to engineers, to chemists, to whatever sphere of operations you can think of, IT, systems managers. Placements take place from general workers level up to the highest level of workers that can be employed. So it's a diverse sector of placements. Chair, the Department of Labour is following what actually the ANC manifesto is saying, and that is not to prohibit this practice, but to regulate it. That's why they introduced in NetLag certain provisions and certain stipulations trying to regulate, and as they put it, push back certain boundaries that's been exceeded. And that's why we agree and we comment on that, and as to how, from the producer side, we think that boundaries can actually be properly pushed back with responsibility both towards the industry and towards the employees as such. The job security, again, we refer to our presentation where we said we need to find the definition and the fine line and the balance between what is a temporary worker and by definition a temporary job and what is a permanent worker and by definition a permanent job. And that is the two things that we need to streamline and to make sure that all the laws speak to each other in terms of a definition of who's the employer, who's the employee, what is a temporary employee and what is a permanent employee. Because that's the duty of the legislator, is to make sure that all the acts speak to each other in terms of definitions, and there's no contradiction in that.
Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair, the reason and the rationale why we cited a number of those sections, they deal with statutory liability of temporary employment services. I mean, the first one, Section 198, it talks about that triangle employment relations. Subsection 2, it talks about the liability in an event where there is a contravention on a number of areas like collective agreements and fair labor practices and so forth. Section 821 of the basic condition of employment, it talks about hours of work, holiday, leave, and notices. And those are statutory liabilities. Section 24 of the Skills Development Act talks about the the registration of private employment services, and also the relevance of that section also deals an attempt to define an employee in terms of the Employment Equity Act. That's section 57, Honorable Nyakembo. The Unemployment Insurance Act that you refer, it also then ties the definition of employee-employer in relation to payment of remuneration. And it also then addresses the manner in which the point that we raised earlier in terms of the compliance and non-compliance issues. Then coming to the point raised by speaker from NATU, in relation to accounts of non-compliance that for the past 2 days number of people alluded to. Madam Speaker, for the past period, we talked about the non-compliance and lack of enforcement, and surely part and parcel of the regulatory model that we suggested yesterday and even today, it basically attempts to deal with the question of registration and deregistration of brokers that they are unethical, so that that board or that body can then deal with the unethical and unscrupulous operators that are not compliant in whatever form. And hence the composition of that takes form, or the composition deals with the representation from the industry, from government, and even from organized labor, so that when it deals with the registration, workers' rights, the question of conditions of employment, contracts of employment benefits, they're above board because they form part and parcel of that board in terms of the regulatory aspects. The third point that, again, the speaker referred to wage rates and flexibility. I want to draw to the house of this attention, the attention of this house that across bargaining council and sectoral determination, there are minimum rates that are agreed by parties within the bargaining council, and even when the minister extends the agreement, the extension is then applicable to the entire industry. However, in an event where parties or individual companies they apply for an exemption, also there is a process that deals with that process or that aspect. But again, from our perspective, we are not even articulating and arguing for an exemption because we are compliant with not only minimums, because, I mean, if one were to give you empirical evidence or justification, we have tons and tons of information, but not with us here today, where in the engineering industry, for example, the member companies that operate in that industry, they pay above the industry minimum, not even by 10%, by more than 30%. Again, if we were to look at the road freight bargaining council, the members that are associated to CASE, they pay way, way, way above industry minimum. And surely that demonstrates and the ethical behavior that our members are demonstrating out there to say we are compliant, and surely we need them to look at the question of regulation properly. The question, coming then to the question of training, it would be difficult, Madam Chair, to respond on the debate and discussion that took place between BOSA and Department of Trade and Industry in relation to training. Apart from the fact that if one were to draw to the attention of this House, is that Business Unity South Africa participate within the National Skills Authority, participate within the CITAS across the board, where member companies and organizations, they participate across the dispensation of national skills development strategy. And to that effect, even currently, the debate and discussion at NSA in terms of finalizing the strategy three, the National Development Strategy 3, is still under debate and discussion, including even the CETA reestablishment or certification. So all those things basically then demonstrate willingness on the part of business in playing and being compliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
More questions for Kate and Patricia? Okay, for follow up?
No, there are two questions. There are two questions that I have not responded to. The one is the issue of learnership. In your presentation, you stated that you have registered 20,000 learners. So the question is, because there are three bodies who are involved in the process of learnership. Employer, training provider, the learner, to understand where there has to be a learnership agreement between the learner and the employer. And I also take you to the definition of an employer, which I found in the Employment Equity Act. And that definition is very precise. Labor broker is not an employer in terms of that definition. How do you get involved in these three flags of attending to issues of learnership?
Okay.
I'm not speaking here on behalf of the producer when I'm applying this. I'm speaking on behalf of the teacher that I represent as the chairman of the Labor Recruitment Board. What we do is we fund learnerships, but we do is we fund vocational training out of what is called the discretionary grant portion of your skills levy. You've got a mandatory grant, you've got a discretionary grant. And the discretionary grant portion is used to train the temporary people as well. If we are in the process, for instance, of buying simulators to train drivers, because the end user insists on having trained drivers. The labor worker can't provide proper trained drivers all the time with the necessary hours that are required. So we, from the skills side, from the CETA side, use this discretionary grant to do that kind of training. I think Dennis can speak to you about, for instance, Fedusa, that has been training a lot of learners in terms of artisans, also using the discretionary grant. And I'll give over to my colleague.
Okay. Chairperson, we focus mostly on Section 28, artisan qualification. You would know that acting director now is the person that, once a person goes through the trade test, he's the one that signs the certificate. You see, so once this is, and last year we had a graduation team of 500 of our members that have been unemployed or been through retrenchment. And then what we do is we take them through the Section 28, and then they become qualified as artisans once they've gone through the process. And the Department of Labor then issues the Section 28 certificate, you know, for them. And then that gives them an opportunity to re-enter the labor market.
Thank you. Mr. Skandek?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The first question for CAPES, although there would be two or three more, but if they could respond to this one, a direct question whether Capital Outsourcing Group is one of their members. And then I would want to assist the honorable member that spoke about hearing and listening. I think that the honorable member misquoted the saying, because they said hearing is a skill, but listening is an art. So I just hope the honorable member would remember that for the future. Now, I'm not sure if Kate can respond to that from the top of the head, if Capital Outsourcing Group is a member of them. While they are thinking, if I can ask producer two questions. In terms of the research done, would they agree that the power relations, especially in those countries where the research was done, between employee and employers and trade unions and employers, that it is not the same as it is within our country, and that obviously would have an impact on the decision of regulating or banning. Also, the rate of violations or non-compliance with acts within those countries, whether they have also done the research particular to that. And then lastly, the history within those countries where they've done the research with regards to human rights abuses. As someone has said, that we need to look as apples or compare apples with apples and not apples with something else. So those are the some of the questions for Fedusa. I'm not sure if Capes could respond, because I am sitting with a contract, and if they are not able, I would want to quote from a contract that is signed in terms of section, or presumed to be signed in terms of section 198.8.45. This is a worker that came to us for assistance before signing of this contract, because the worker had a particular problem, and this is a very large labor broking in terms of our understanding. Non-procedural strikes or work stoppages which will result in dismissal, and the employee, which is very important to note, blacklisted from all capital outsourcing group and all associated brokers nationwide. So I would want also to know whether Capes, this is part of their endorsement. Now, Madam Chair, they've spoken about the compliance level. There's a number of other clauses that we would want them to speak to, because we hear they are saying they are good brokers, labor brokers, and we would want them to be specific, you know, in mentioning where workplaces, names of those companies that we can say to workers, no, but those are good labor brokers, you know, to work for. We're not saying that they are bad labor brokers. We're not saying that at all. Madam Chair, in terms of the termination of contract, what is important to read is that this is in terms of Section 198, and in terms of Section 198 under the Labor Relations Act and the BCA, and also the sectorial determination, this is also a worker working on a farm in a permanent position that has been working for a number of years, that have been retrenched, and the labor broker has taken over, and it's one of those beautiful farms, more or less on the N1 near to Palm. I would not mention the name of the farm for particular reasons. At any time during the operation, it speaks about the termination of this contract, of this agreement, the employer or the employees shall be entitled to terminate the employment or cancel the agreement for any reason whatsoever by giving not less than one shift's notice to the other party. And this is a worker that has been working for a number of years, and the contract has just been renewed time and again, and there's one shift notice that could be given, not in compliance with the BCA, not in compliance with the sectorial determination. Now, what we've picked up in this contract, which is, and we're not saying that this is a norm in the industry with labor brokers, but what we picked up, that labor broking is not only now making a business of using people as a commodity and as a being part of the product instead of part of being producing the product. They have also now become brokers in selling financial services. And in this instance, it's a funeral policy. As a condition of employment, and this is, you must, if you don't sign this contract, you don't get renewed and your services automatically are terminated. That the employee subscribes to the Capital Outsourcing Group funeral cover unless the employee is working on a site where funeral cover is part of the remuneration package. The premium for such cover will be deducted by the company from remuneration and paid over to the service provider. All cover providers will be according to the terms and conditions of the service provider. So the worker does not even have an opportunity to choose what kind of policy to make a choice with which service provider. The detailed terms will be made available either during induction or on completion of the funeral cover documentation. Now, Madam Chair, this, I'm certain by now because these workers have gone to refuse to sign this contract, they were not given a further contract, although they have been working there for a number of years. Now, in that instance, we've heard from Capes, and we are a bit disappointed in especially some of the trade unions that has presented views that we believe are not in defense of the workers, but only in defense of their own members, who we perceive not to fall in the majority of those that are violated and those that are exploited, and we respect their rights to represent the interests of their members and not the interests of workers in general. Now we want to understand from, especially from Capes, because we've heard every time the enforcement, the monitoring, and we understood that there are those challenges and therefore the trade unions, civil society, working with the Department of Labor and government institutions in order to strengthen the hand. But could this be used as an excuse? Because we've heard about the scorpions yesterday too. We must first see whether the crime escalates. Should these criminalities perceive to exist and continue to exist because they are not caught? Are we saying that because they are not caught, the actions of those that violate workers' rights, that they are not to be blamed actually? It's actually the policemen that are to be blamed. And we need more light on that. And further to this, if you are not able to comply with the bare minimums that are currently in place, are you not just wanting to create more legislation and more regulation so that you can ask this question again in 5 years that the monitoring and enforcement is a problem because you are creating all of these loopholes, you are creating all of these challenges so that you can continue with your atrocities? So these are questions that is in our minds, and we obviously, as we go along with this process, need some assistance to that. So those will We'll stop there. Madam Chen, we thank you and we hope the honorable member capture the misquote from us.
Correct that quote. Please, Chen.
I understand what you want to correct.
Ek kan dit vir jou in Afrikaans sê indien dit nodig is. Dan kan jy dit beter verstaan. But be as it may, allow me to repeat what I said earlier on. And I'll say it slowly. Hearing is a gift. Right?
Can you finish, Mr. Lowe?
Yeah, I said to him earlier on, Chair, is hearing is a gift, but listening is a skill. And it would be very appropriate if we can apply that skill of listening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable. We have Mr. Philip. We have Mr. Shaw. And you will answer the question. You have Mr. Sharp and Phillips. And then that will be the end of this discussion. I hope so.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I can't comment on the particular content of particular contracts between particular individuals, particularly with regard to shift requirements, etc. But what I would like to do is comment on one aspect. We can, of course, through BUSA and various industry associations, take up those specific questions and respond to them. But I want to indicate some of the problems we've had in the provision of benefits within this industry. As business, organized business, we try to facilitate meetings between insurers, banks, temporary employment services, and the providers really of benefits. Because these workers were often going to banks seeking credit, since many of them are young people early in their careers, it was understandable they would be looking for credit for various reasons. The banks at that time had very simple provisions in their credit application and scoring mechanisms that if you were not a traditional permanent worker, you were automatically rejected for any and all applications made. And we try to persuade the banks, the insurance companies, the providers of medical aids, the providers of funeral cover, and others that this workforce often had a greater continuity of income than they as insurers and financial institutions were concerned about. But we didn't have a great deal of success, and it was on account of the ongoing demand from the employees of temporary employment services and the failure of traditional organizations to provide these services to atypical employees that these services came to be provided by the industry itself. So funeral cover, for example, being compulsory, does not arise because the industry makes a profit from it. In fact, the industry subsidizes that as a benefit. But it could only provide it itself, the industry, because, of course, it's not a funeral cover provider, this industry. But in the absence of other viable products for this industry, the industry needed to provide these on sufficient scale for it to be administratively possible and effective. So I understand the question is very well-intentioned and seeking to represent workers' interests. But there is a context to these questions that can't be ignored. Atypical work is a new and burgeoning and growing form of work around the world. Many organizations are not geared to providing services and products to these workers. and these things are being grappled with. But there was nothing sinister in the industry's intentions to provide these themselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll try to be brief. Number one, in respect of the ability to provide answers, I think in respect of a lot of questions that were posed today, the GUSA will undertake to submit a supplementary submission to yourself, following also the ASA experience in America, so that we are able to sort of focus on the relevant questions that were posed today. In respect of the questions of the relationships between and the power relationships in the different countries, Germany, there are very poor relations, and it's tilting towards or in favor of the employer to such an extent that the government now wants to regulate. As I said, there was no regulation since 2003. In Belgium and Netherlands, there is a very, very equal power sharing. There is a big understanding of social dialogue, the importance of collective agreements between the social partners, and that they need between themselves keep government out of this world of work and regulate the employment situation in those two countries by way of collective agreements with very little or very broad legislative interference. In France, there's again very poor relations to such an extent that there's big demonstrations that are going on there. There's hostage taking to prevent retrenchments and the police playing sort of mediators. In South Africa, I think we're fortunate, and if you ask all the other trade union confederations and federations, you would say we're actually very fortunate that we have a very balanced power between the employers' organizations and the employee representatives over here, to such an extent that even from the labor side, there's an alliance between CUSATU and the ANC, the ruling party, where you don't actually have any of those featuring any of the countries that we were exposed to. So we're actually much more fortunate in South Africa in respect of the power relations of that. In respect of the human rights abuses of rights, I think it's well known for all of these countries, not only is there ample examples of human rights abuses in all of those countries, but there's also ample examples of where they went outside their borders to Africa and colonized Africa. So I think there's ample examples that I need not elaborate on. The information on transgressions or violations, unfortunately, most of these countries, like South Africa, do not really keep statistics to the extent that we can rely on that, save for Netherlands, where they've got a very big and good enforcement agency, but regulated by the two social partners, the unions on the one side, the federations on the one side, and the employers' organizations, ABU, on the other side. And there we can make that statistics available for yourselves if you are interested in that. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Chair, thank you. Just with regard to the question for one of the commentators relating to capital outsourcing, as I explained in my presentation, that CAPE is a confederation. We're a confederation of associations. So at this stage, it would be very difficult to specifically identify whether that company is a member of one of the associations. We'd have to come back to you. We'd undertake to investigate if necessary. But at this stage, as we sit here today, we can't give an answer. Thank you.
No, I'm going to allow any more questions on CAPE and FEDUSA. I have only Mr. Phillips who has to speak. Questions? No, you can't question yourself. I'm asking people who have questions.
I just had a comment, Madam Chair. We have a plain sketch. We need to depart at about 4:30, some of the members. Just to keep that in mind. Thank you.
I didn't hear you.
Madam Chair, I said that just to keep in mind as a comment that we have a flight sketch back to Johannesburg in the next 15 minutes. So if they offer the questions, we need to deal with those in the next 15 minutes. Otherwise, we need to depart. Thank you.
Mr. Philip.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday we were faced with a similar situation where a question was put to a trade union arguing for the retention of labour broking. And that organisation is known to have right-wing tendencies. Today, again, we have a trade union federation arguing for the retention of labour broking. When, in my thinking, and this is my humble submission, I would think that trade unions primarily would argue in the interest of employees. It begs the question, from where or from whom do they draw their, where do they draw their membership from? And secondly, if FEDUSA is suggesting further regulation, that's problematic. Thirdly, they speak of a German, Dutch, UK and European countries, and nobody is casting any aspersion on them electing to leave the African continent and seek to look at the European and the American model. When we spoke of the Namibian experiences yesterday, there were howls of derision and aspersion that was cast on the Namibian model. In my mind, I asked myself the question, does it suggest that because it's an African experience, it's a bad experience? But if it's a European experience, then it's a good experience. Similarly, you cannot overhaul or reinvent a system which is inherently evil. The previous administration, they attempted to do the same with separate development and introduced the House of Delegates and the so-called House of Representatives. A couple of years later, the system failed. Now, FEDUSA is suggesting, and I say this with the greatest of respect, an industry, and I quoted statistics yesterday, 78% of it, of the 6,000 or more labor brokers who are operating in this country nationwide, are drawn from the ranks of the Afrikaner population. A person or a group of persons that have had scant regard for the fundamental rights of people. FEDUSA is now suggesting, and we heard submissions, shocking submissions this morning, jobs for sex. He is saying it's good to have sex with the employee. I will not criminalize it. I will fine you. It is beyond comprehension that they sit here and suggest to us that they come here with clean hands, no amount of posturing, no amount of grandstanding, and no amount of window dressing is going to take away from me the knowledge that labor broking is inherently evil. You cannot reform an evil system. And similarly, to now shift the blame, like they've been doing for the past 2 days that we've been sitting here, today suddenly we hear that the problem, no, it's not with us. The problem lies with the Department of Labor. Then we need to look at the historical evolution of labor broking. 1994, Joe Slover, the late Joe Slover, introduced a sunset clause specifically to retain the skills of the very people who dominate the labor broking environment, Afrikaner people. Instead, they feared a majority government and fled. And you had a slow evolution of what today is an evil. Now they're suggesting that let's go back to the same people and say to them, let's reform this system of human trafficking. Make it look more presentable. You cannot. The very essence of the word broking suggests to barter an exchange of money. Otherwise, if they are saying that they are not trafficking, then why the proliferation? Why 6,000 or more labor brokers to place 500,000 people every single day and generate in excess of 26 billion rand? It is either that they today have found that after 15 years, they have not been alert to the vices, the exploitation and the violation of people's basic rights, and suddenly wake up today and come to this house and suggest to us that, look, you people have been stupid. We have all the plans, we have all the answers. It is absolutely and patently ludicrous for them to come here and posture and suggest to us that, look, give us a second chance. Another 15 years of abuse. I don't think so. You cannot reform this law. It has to be banned in its totality. And we do not need to go to Europe or America. Right next door to us, we look at the Namibian experience and look at the African continent for solutions to a problem which is uniquely African.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. The last person in answering, I mean, in for questions and comments was Mr. Phillips. Now, we are going to take a presentation from COSATU, from the General Secretary of COSATU, but before that, we will allow Nyameka, okay? Oh, okay. To talk.
Engosi, Madam Speaker, and Nyameka Nam, Kakezi Kota. Umnandi Nyameka Nam, and Sedenza, the Likoba, the labor brokers, the Tongazo app. Because if Kuronga in Nyaga, Negan, and Tanfunu, the Funum Sabin. Umzekelo ngoku ndisebenza kwihotele ethile. Kwesile hotele ihouse
ehinyeleka. Kamete.
The housekeeping as you were telling department is seven zanzima and the owner department is also been the own tax. But the owner department in our way ganga. Bana I guess to the Gelini. Umzekelo, the 25th March, Tabasin Martini, guest, at Ilashegole, watch your room in. Savizu again, he said to read his own statement. Question statement, we are both against the Bellet in Toba, we are Nangela and we polygraph. So, now we are from Magabubage. Our young leaders are going to come from Mamma. And that's whom. But the other means when the land is about off. So we had security, my dear, and then here we security early late when the land was set. Pope and Ubudo again, Ubungu's bandy of Funa New York set. Can't figure changing room, figure what happened to Kulul. So now Kulul, the Kulula, your kingdom, Dabas, eh? Yeah, born at Bandy, I equally watch room. So now I end up going to Gagi. Kandi buya kusukela ndilayiba ndibuya kwi-off ndifika kundive nje i-rumors into yoba iwatshi ifumanekile ndihambe ndiye kwimanaja yam ndiyobuza ibe isithi ewe imeyili ikhona etshoyo ukuba iwatshi ifumanekile. So umbuzo wam ke ngoku into yoba bathini nangam nabe bekhululusile bandenzisela kwacaba kakho mntu uyaziyo ndabiza i-operation manager into yoba makubizwe yona because andizuyiyeka le nto. So yabizwa ke nyhani baxoxa ndaxoxa. Then xa besiya ngoku security abayanga behamba nam baye behamba bodwa and yabe indixele into yabalonta ndithi kuye funeka izocela uxolo because kaloku indikhululisile yandimisazi. So baye behamba bodwa ke but babuya ke babuye nale leta ndicela ndifunda le ndawo yokugqibela ibhalwe yisecurity ndifunde. Later, the incident was discussed with the security manager who informed me, which is the operational manager, that the person who conducted the search has been dismissed from the property. And the justice also informed, justice is the security manager, justice also informed me that strip searches are not conducted at the hotel by the security as per their police. So this is left up to the police. Also, the police are called dependent on the severity of the case. So le into yenzeka abayindathatha into yoba kuba ndimnyama, that's why bengakhange babize emapolisa babona into yoba ngabayenze ngokwabo. So ndafumanisa into yoba ke isidima sam sehlisiwe. And then kwezi labor brokers sifumana ubunzima. Umzekelo, kwezinye ufumanisa into yoba singena ngo-7 kusasa sizawuphuma u-4, akhange utye. Bona zi-managers bayahamba bayokutya, nina nisebenza ndilambile bathi bawugqiba. Xa befumene nje babezawutsheka emveni kwenu, xa befumene into erongo kufumaniseke bafumane into erongo, uzawuxelela into yoba yi-poor work performance. So sinalo ngxaki thina kwi-labor brokers esisebenzelayo. Njengoba kungamazi ke nomqeshi wethu awazi nalo mntu owunale labor broker afuna ukwazi into yoba ungakunyukele ngenhla, uphelela kwezi manager zihlaziyo kapha phambi kwenu. And then enye into, indaba yomrholo. Uyawusebenza inyanga yonke, usebenza nzima e-housekeeping. Xa ufikelwa kule mpelanyanga, uyawufika awunamali ebhenki. Xa ufuna uyoqonda kubo, bazawuxelela into yoba no i-hours zakho mhlawumbi khange zingene right. So njengoba inyanga kulen inyanga iphela nge-31st nje, uzawuxelela into yoba uyawubhatalwa nge-9, which is izawuba sibheke ezimbini before ubhatalwe. And then bafuna into yoba ngexesha lomsebenzi wena ibasemsebenzini. Wawuba absent uxelele into yoba ubungamelanga uba absent, uyawubanga explain into yoba ubungenamali, uxelele into yoba ubungakhange uzilungiselele na. Which is ke thina asinamali mhlawumbi ukuthiwa uhleli unemali esebhankini, uzawuthiwa ungapeki ube usebenzisa lisebhankini, uxhomekeke kuzayipeya uphela ekupheleni kwenyanga. So sinalo ngxaki thina injalo. And ke undicela nento yoba le ikheyisi yokustritshwa kwami andikwazi uyiyeka tu. Ndiyacela into yoba ndinikwe umntu endinodibana naye malunga nale kheyisi, iqhubekeke ibheke phambili, because qho uba ndicinga ngayo ndiba nomsindo. Kaba zininzi i-incident ezenzekileyo emveni kwazo njengenxa yokuba lo ndiba nomsindo, qho uba ndibona laa mntu ndiba nomsindo. So bendicela mhlawumbi like o-union aba thina abantu, ngoba loku thina asinabo o-union. So bendicela mhlawumbi xa umntu onengxaki ongenayunion osebenzela i-labor broker ahoywe, ngoba ke asizange uba mandibheke ngabi, siphela ke ngosingamaxhoba. Omnye umntu ade amude ade ayeke usebenza baloku akapeyi, uyawubheka uxelelwa isitori. So bendicela urhulumente mhlawumbi akayilandeleli le nto ezi-labor brokers, ngakumbi apha ezihotele sixhatshazwa nyhani ezihotele. Inkosi, madam speaker.
The story goes as follows. On the 25th of March 2009, one guest in the hotel where she is working claimed that his watch was lost, and then she was called in to be searched and directed to a female security who undressed her, and only to find out that the watch was not with her. She was also told that she has to go to a polygraph test in order to determine whether really the watch was not taken by her, even if it was not found during the search. She believed that the conduct by both the employer and security was of disrespect to her, and she also wanted the security to apologize of the unexpected conduct, but that was not done. And she believes that that was done because she is black, because if she was white, obviously the conduct of the jury was going to be taken up by management of the hotel. The conditions that they work in, they don't even have tea or lunch breaks, whereas the management of the hotel leaves them working throughout the day for indefinite hours, and they are told that they are employed by a labor broker, but they don't even know this labor broker. So she is requesting that unions, if they can, together with government, to come to their rescue in assisting her, in particular the conduct by the security and management of that hotel. Even their salaries are not transferred to their bank account annually. If the month ends on the 30th or 31st, they will go to the bank with the hope that the money is there, and order to find out that there is no money. And then when they query that, they will be told that they will get paid on the 9th of the following month. That makes it difficult for them to come to work after that because they don't have money, because they use public transport to get to work, to an extent where some of her colleagues, they decide to quit the job because they can't get to work because they are not getting paid. So she is appealing for assistance. Thanks.
Mr. Shah?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Over the last 2 days, we've heard some devastating accounts of abuse, purported abuse, widespread and researched and acknowledged abuse of all kinds in this industry. I think what is useful in this forum is to examine what the appropriate remedy is. The young lady suggested that as a first port of call, reporting this to a trade union might be effective. But we heard yesterday from four individuals how reporting these events to their trade union had been ineffective, not over a period of days or multiple requests, over many requests over multiple months. I don't think the solution is to have any one of this tripartite proposal of the industry. I don't think it's useful to have only one party as a port of call. There must be a co-regulatory body that is properly resourced, using funding provided jointly by the industry and the state, properly resourced with appropriate enforcement capabilities, so that these operators, who we all reject, can be driven out of business. This is not in dispute. The industry, we've heard through yesterday and today, accepts the need for a co-regulation framework, but it's the remedy rather than the abuse that is, I think, in question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shastro. Any more contributions on this topic? Okay. General Secretary of COSATU, Mr. Vazi.
Just one question. When Kate was responding, there was something that was not clear to me, which sounded like there is a breach of the laws of the country. That as these employers, they are now providing financial services. Now, what I don't know, are they registered with FSB? And how are they doing it? Because I know that financial services organization in this country must register with FSB. Now, I did not hear CAPES condemning the evidence that was brought here, but instead Capes condoned what is happening and extend justified it on the conditions that are put by the bank. So what I want to know is, are they also registered with the FSB now?
Capes has left.
I should respond on behalf of them.
Yes,
okay. A business unity can respond on their behalf, since we've worked in close partnership on all of these proposals and so on. Yes, I confirm that Capes and its member companies are registered using all appropriate regulations, not only those of the Financial Services Board, but including others, the employees who make these products available have achieved all the required certification. But as I said before, one cannot speak about agencies who are not affiliated to CAPS. That is something that currently the industry has no control over and no redress with if they violate any laws. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Rabbi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to all the members of the committee. And thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to make a representation to you. It's a very important process in our view, because it's a process, as we are saying and explaining it over and over, that you want to listen to us. And so that if necessary, somewhere down the line, you will decide what to do about the information we will provide to you today. And that information has been provided over the past 2 days or so. Right from onset, we must say, from the COSATU point of view, which represent way over 2 million members, we've come here to lobby you and to hope, and hoping that we will influence you to initiate a process wherein the labor brokering system will be outlawed, prohibited, and or banned in the country. That's where we starting. That's our starting point. We will provide later with some of the examples adding to what we have already heard today. And after I've made this introductory remark, I will call upon the president of NUMSA, Cedric, who represents over 240,000 members in the metal industry, to talk about some examples of what has been happening and the efforts the union has been making to make sure that there is a regulation and that they use the collective muscle of other workers to try and protect this group of vulnerable workers in that industry. You will be followed by Zakhao, which organizes in the sector that this lady has just spoken about, and the NUM in the mining industry and the construction sector, and the HAW in the state, and the domestic workers themselves. We will appreciate the separate if you could bear with us that we just give some specifics in relation to those sectors that we feel must be highlighted to you, so that when you consider this matter, you will take that into consideration.
May I ask a question? Have we moved into the next presentation? And is it on the agenda for all of these submissions to occur one after the other?
Yes.
Because I know that Booster's presentation is scheduled to be after COSATU's.
No, we have rescheduled or rescheduled this program. And in the morning, you know, I've noticed that some of the brokers, most of them have left. And when decisions are taken, they will not understand because they did not do what police was saying, law was saying, you know. Everybody listened to them, but they are all gone. Yesterday, people had the problem, same problem of life, and they were rescheduled for later and today. But for whatever reason, they are all rushing out, all the brokers, most of them are out. So all these people are in the problem. They are coming, it's going to be last week, it's going to be Safu, Fau, Bosa.
Could I clarify, Chair, are all of these presentations going to be delivered today?
Yes, they will. Okay. And they will be delivered today or are going to be done today.
Thank you.
Sorry, I mean, you've got farmers, right? Farmers. The union that organizes farm workers.
Okay.
Having said that, Chairperson, I feel that right from the beginning, we must just clarify one matter which we feel is important. Because I've been listening here with people deliberately conflating and with the view of confusing matters in relation to what is the labor brokering and the need for temporary workers, seasonal workers, and so forth. We operating in the real economy, and in that economy there will always be a need for temporary labor for specific economic reasons. There will always be a need for seasonal type of employment because it is the nature of that business to have a seasonal type of employment because those people cannot be employed all the time and throughout the year. The point that I'm trying to make is that there are laws and regulations and sub-regulations in the form of the sectoral determination, which are flexible enough to allow employers the space to use temporal labor where it is necessary in line with the economic reasons of the company and or to use seasonal labor. The labor law regime in our country is flexible enough. And today we have been hearing examples of over-flexibility, allowing that those conditions should be allowed to continue. So from where we are, from the trade union movement, we're not coming here to say ban use of temporal labor. Ban use of seasonal labor. Because that's not practical. That's not what we ask you for. I think it is important that we do that because people then say, oh, we're painting as very stupid, mad people who operate from some planet. The difference, though, is this. There is a massive difference between use of temporal seasonal work and human trafficking. Or if you take an offense on the use of human trafficking, then it has to be human beings in transit, where you have a person that nobody has seen in most of the cases, exploiting the vulnerability of sections of workers in order to barter with them for profit, not for the people who are doing the work, but for the reason of generating profit for himself or herself, more likely to be for himself. That's the difference. So the honorable, one of the honorable members spoke about the definition of the employer from the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, which we supported, we negotiated. That's very clear of what is the employer. But what we're talking about here is these people, between 1 million and 2 million, we heard who are being moved from one company to the next, is not the employers doing that. It is this association of people who have organized themselves to traffic and barter and with human beings. That's what I think we're talking about, the labor brokering system. Now, what the third issue I want to suggest to you, Chairperson, is that instead of going to Europe and America and elsewhere, don't go any far to know what is happening. Just walk in 5 minutes across, you will find your hotel, and ask those workers the conditions and who employs them. And then you will hear stories that will be worse than what we have heard so far. Practical experiences of the level of abuse in the hands of the labor brokers. Not from somewhere in Germany or anywhere. Yes, in Cape Town. Anywhere, yeah. Go and check the people who will be serving the tea tonight. When you do the room service, who employs them, whether they've ever seen their employer, and how much are they getting, and how many hours they've been standing doing that thing. Then you will be shocked about the tales of what they will tell you. That's now the practical realities of what people have to go through here. The papers accept anything written on. That's what you can never avoid. The paper does accept. Please, just forget about the papers a little bit. Go to all the provinces and hold this hearing in the provinces. Invite farm workers, the domestic workers, the workers employed in the manufacturing sector, in the mining industry, all of them. Ask them to come and talk to you about their experiences of working under labor brokering. Then you will associate what they will tell you with the good stories of good labor brokers that we have heard about today, and see who should be lying between these thousands and thousands of people who are finding themselves in these unfortunate circumstances, and the people that have been speaking good English here. Then, the question that we must be asking, I'm going to speak a little bit of politics, I'm sorry, this is not a diversion, is what type of a society do we want to build? Now, we know that we're operating under a capitalist society whose values, unfortunately, include the survival of the fittest, the dog eats dog, use of the law of the jungle, thriving on the weaknesses of others to build castles and fortunes for the few. But surely we don't want to build a society based on those values. Our guidance to our values are enshrined in our constitution. That's the type of society we would want to build for ourselves and for our children. And one of the clauses that have been quoted so frequently in these hearings in the Bill of Human Rights is the clause that guarantees all South African workers a right to fair labor standards and practices. Now, the government for the past 15 years have been trying to regulate that through enactment of various pieces of legislation to give an expression to that cornerstone of our new democracy. All shall have access to fair labor standards. There's an LRA, there's a basic conditions of employment, there's all manner of other pieces of legislation. Many of them have been voted here, some of their clauses. The centrality of the problem we're facing is something called enforceability of all those legislations. Yeah, I was listening today about people complaining about this useless, they say, Department of Labor. And I asked the representative of the Department of Labor, how many labor inspectors do you employ? And the answer I got was, no, there are about 800. So I said, I know that Kosatu forms part of the people's budget. We have been knocking in the parliament door over and over to argue the inappropriateness of our macroeconomic framework and the budget location on such important issues as the enforcing, the ability of the state to enforce the laws of the country. With great opposition from everybody, we have been called everything under the sun for making those arguments. But here is the practical issue. There are only 800 enforcers of the labor law in the country. It's not practically possible that they can be everywhere. And I found that thing very amusing, that the people who are being accused, who stand accused of allowing these practices that we feared about today happening under their nose, are the very same people who say, oh, but when these things happen, where are the labor inspectors? Where is the Department of Labor? It's shameful, isn't it, when we have to think about it. It's like this group of thugs who raid a township. And when you talk about the atrocities that they commit to people, they themselves will then say, but where were the police when all this was happening? Unbelievable morality. This is this dog-eat-dog mentality, the survival of the fittest, the law of the jungle, thriving on the weaknesses of others. What are we dealing with here, Chairperson? We are dealing with the crisis, the structural crisis of the economy as a result of what we inherited from the system, from our past, including colonialism. So we're dealing with the crisis of unemployment that I think some have referred to, massive, deep crisis of poverty, and unfortunately growing levels of inequality. And those inequalities are no longer limited to the apartheid coaches as we knew them. They now extend to all the coaches, including the third coach of apartheid, where the Africans were. So it's not surprising now that you will have some of the former union organizers coming here to speak about why this system must be protected. Because of those inequalities, the material conditions of individuals shapes their minds and their thinking and the people they associate with. Nothing surprising. Everybody reacts to situations on the basis of how and what type of a shoe he or she is wearing. So I'm not surprised that the former NUMSA, in fact, was not just an organizer. This was the head of the bargaining council as a negotiator of the engineering sector in NUMSA. Today is coming back here as representing the labor broker. That's history repeating itself. That's what happens in the society all the time. The struggle produces its best heroes and traitors all the time. Now, that's what we are dealing with here, Chairperson. So in your report, what we want you to consider is that there will be no successful addressing of this situation unless we address those structural problems in the economy. Unemployment, the need for industrial policy, the need for a state to do some lot of things about those things and addressing the huge inequalities. The labor brokering system, in my view, is like a social ill. It's the same as HIV and AIDS, or crime, and corruption. It's exactly, it's a social ill, it's an arrangement that is being made to take advantage of the weak and the most vulnerable in the society. Just like it has been in times on the ignorance of the poor. And that's why time affects in particular certain sections of our communities that are weak and vulnerable. It's like the labor brokering, the people who will always climb more and being stripped naked and or being asked to sell sex for jobs. It's those that are most vulnerable in society. It's going to be women. It's going to be your black people, and it's going to be Africans in particular. In that order, it's going to be young people, and I know that the young people are going to make a presentation here. And that's what we've got to be addressing. The cornerstone of addressing this issue is a commitment to build a more equitable society that addresses those fundamental structural problems in our economy and in our political system. The ANC, which have been quoted so many times, have made a commitment for creation of decent work for the next 5 years and beyond. Surely, that agenda will not succeed if we don't do something about the labor brokering system in our country. And we're not talking about regulation. We have lots of laws now that we are unable to enforce. Labor brokering and all its evils happen even in the context of many, many pieces of legislation that are being broken by the people that are concerned. One of the structural problems, the inequalities that the Torah should have mentioned, is that we're dealing here with the reality of the fact that if you look at the trends of the South African economy, the share of labor in the national income has been declining since 1981. The conditions of democracy have not reversed that. The reality is that with democracy, that share of labor in the national income continues to decline. And that's why you can explain these extraordinary high levels of pay for the CEOs and the opulence they live under, way above the means of our economy. And then they turn around and say, regulate the labor brokering system and we can succeed. When they are not succeeding to ensure that those people that they bring into their companies as labor brokers comply with the sectoral determinations or the agreements of the bargaining council. Now, on page 13 of our submission, Chairperson, and because of time, I'm not going to take you through that. But you will see an important statistics that we just felt that we must just bring to attention. That talks about the rate of exploitation of labor, which is a calculation of this profit and total remuneration packages for South African workers. Frightening figures, talking to the issues of inequalities growing again. So that's what we are trying to deal with. That's what, unfortunately, you, honorable members, have to make an intervention, hopefully on behalf of the weak, the defenseless, the vulnerable in our society. Because that's what the Constitution calls on upon you to do, protect the vulnerable, the weak, and the defenseless in our society. There is a growing army of workers in South Africa who are employed by this, under these conditions, are typical forms of work. Labor brokering, subcontractor, sometimes even in the name of black economic empowerment, and this and that and that. We are creating a pool of this permanent and temporal in the economy. It's becoming daily more vulnerable than they were yesterday. Under the apartheid system, that system created the homeland system, where it will put people deliberately as reserved, where it will draw labor, cheap labor, to prop up the mining industry and the farm and the agriculture elsewhere in the real republic. Now, under the conditions of democracy, they suddenly almost the repetition of that under new conditions. The accumulation and the extract of labor under different conditions is called labor brokering. It's called all these manner of names that we have used today. They all have insecure jobs, there's no job security. They all have no benefits of any kind in the majority of the cases. There will be some exemptions. But in the majority of the cases, they have no medical aid, they have no retirement. They are the future burdens to the state. So every time you subsidize and pass budgets here for a more efficient public transport system, for national health insurance, an improvement of our health systems, for education, for everything that is meant to improve the lives of people, inevitably in the process, you subsidize the employer, who will then dump their workers without any form of social security on the lap of the state. The state then must pay for their pension, they must pay for their children and their grandchildren in the form of the social grants and so forth and so forth. And I think that the representatives of the people that you are must take a stance and say, but employers have certain responsibilities to their own employees. They have to do certain things differently than what we have witnessed over a long period of time now. If you don't do that, Chairperson, politically, you would then have failed to address the national question. Our struggle was a struggle to liberate black people in general and African people in particular. If you go to the statistics and the reality of what is happening everywhere, you will see that that pecking order remains in terms of who is in particular a victim of that system of labor brokering. It will be blacks in general and Africans in particular. So if you don't ban and you choose to regulate, and when you know that you have no capacity to enforce, then you would have failed the black people and the Africans in particular. Secondly, this thing has another dimension, the gender dimension that I spoke about. It is women in particular that would be victims of this system. Not just any other woman, in the same parking order, addressing the initial question. Not just about the humiliation of being stripped naked or being asked for sex, but it's actually daily rapes that happen in the farm all the time. Those of you who would have listened to the story of Paul Petersberg over the weekend in the SABC would have been reminded about the nature of those atrocities that continue to happen as we celebrate 15 years of democracy. Thirdly, and when I listened, I came here, I said that Jesus is a class war, yes, underway. Because again, people are defending their turf. We have to defend our turf. We make no bones about it. We're coming from the working class. And we listen very, very angrily at some times of the opposing class absolutely defending its turf and irritated about what we're saying, reminding them of the brutality and the nature of this system. The representatives of the people, in our view, have a responsibility to make sure that workers are not subjected to supreme forms of exploitation. And the labor brokering system is a typical example of an extreme form of exploitation of workers. We want you to intervene, Chairperson. And the only way you can intervene to address that is to ban this and to give meaning to the foundations of our constitution. All shall have a right to fair labor standards and fair labor practices. This thing not only undermines our constitution, but undermines South Africa's obligations to international law. South Africa is a signatory to a convention 101 that talks about a very important fundamental principle: equal pay for work of equal value. Do you know what happens when the subcontracting and labor brokering being introduced in any company? Normally workers are blackmailed through a retrenchment. You will lose your jobs. And indeed, processes get underway to get them retrenched. But if they are about to approach the gate with only 70,000 after working for 15 years and 20 years, they get approached by the HR manager to say, we can save you from this if you will sign the type of contract that the FAO comrades were reading out to us. Blackmailed and knowing the type of future that is awaiting, workers return to sign. And when they sign, and we're not talking about theory, go and listen to the stories of mine workers. Their salaries get cut by more than 50% in occasions, from 3,000-4,000 to 800 rand to 1,200 rand. No more any form of benefit, no transport, no medical aid, no provident fund, long hours, but going back exactly to the same job that they've been doing for the past 20 years, now with new conditions of employment. Violation of that convention on equal pay for work of equal value. You have to intervene, Chairperson. South Africa has to ensure that our democracy is not built on this type of foundation, extreme exploitation of others. We can't feed more inequalities in our society. We can't create conditions where inequalities will not close but will perpetuate. South Africa already is one of the most unequal societies in the world, next to Brazil. Those who have been in Europe, I encourage them to go to Brazil and hear the disastrous conditions under which the Brazilian workers work under the labor brokering system, where 45% 5 years ago of the Brazilian workers have no contract with anybody. They listen to the bell in the street. Cring, 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 we need 15 workers. And the same workers will be needed in that same company forever. But the condition is that you will work here for 8 hours only. Tomorrow, you are a new worker. You are a new worker. You are a new worker for 14 years, for 20 years. You are a permanent casual. You are a permanent temporary worker. That's not the type of a society we want to build. Yes, I know ideologically there are people who believe that the only way to survive is to be exploited under those conditions. Even those people who believe in that cannot look at those workers, go in here at Southern Sun and go and talk to them. You can't look in their eyes and say what is happening to you is okay. You can't go to Checkers and tell those workers who have been working there for 22 years as temporary workers without any benefit, who are all in their 50s now to ask for their pension, that it is okay for them to leave their work without any form of pension or social security net. We have to have some form of a conscience. We have to retain some level of integrity and ubuntu in our approach to politics. Politics is not fun, it's about the issues of ordinary people. Now, I want to respond to some of the points that have been raised, dear Chairperson, in conclusion. I've already related this thing about this 800, thank you, this 800 the inspectors. And I want you to consider making a recommendation to take forward what is in the ANC manifesto in relation to farm workers, that is, the government will play a role in assisting unionization of farm workers. And as you can see, that need is not just limited to farm workers. It extends to all workers employed by the labor brokers. They are as vulnerable as the farm workers are. Secondly, regulation in this context will not help. And now I've been listening very carefully here about some evidence of how this regulation will work in the practical reality. I've not been hearing anything. I heard somebody mentioning the need for a separate bargaining council, and I was looking at that, okay, maybe this is a justification that is between 1 and 2 million people who are being moved from one company to company, one sector to the next sector, with huge consequences to our economy, including our ability to train people and to increase our skill base. Huge consequences, not only to that issue and a range of other issues that we can mention. But I see that that's not going to be a solution. The best way is to make sure that we retain the architecture of what we were seeking to do when we negotiated the labor laws in our country. There is an employer, there has to be an employee. We mustn't introduce a new buffer which creates confusion and conditions of exploitation of workers. I can't see that working in practical reality. So will, in my view, in our view, will not work the issue of co-regulatory bodies. Some people have suggested that this should be bilateral, and others have suggested that labor and therefore workers can be represented. Co-regulatory body. I know that in my language there's something that says in order to catch a thief, you must get another thief to guard your property, because the thieves know each other. But I was trying to take that literally and apply in this condition that can thieves truly guard each other in this circumstance, this core regulatory and to try and enforce the legislation. I don't think so. I don't think that's feasible. You can't take a kingpin of a cash heist and say your responsibility is to make sure that this doesn't happen. And you will now have to give up on doing that, because we'll give you now 10,000 rand a month. Practically, the temptation to go and rob this cash in transit fellows is much more greater than a regular salary. that is guaranteed every month. So maybe we need to have a further discussion on that issue. I hear that our colleagues in FEDUSA also believe in this thing. So we definitely challenge the trade union movement. We must go and talk about each other thing. Maybe we will be educated. Maybe we will see that this is really possible. We need to engage on that. But from where I am now, and all my colleagues here agree, that they can't see how this is going to be practically possible. It is a myth, that's the next point, that if you outlaw labor brokering, you will be undermining these 1 to 2 million jobs. It's just not true. It cannot be backed by any form of empirical evidence. The reality of the matter is that there is no company that employs anyone for charity or because people feel that they must just employ. We have a social responsibility to the country. We hate unemployment, and therefore we're now going about in the business of employing people. Nobody makes any form of investment with an intention of addressing our crisis of unemployment. Not living in this world. No matter how good-hearted those people are, that's not their intention when they make sacrifices and invest. That's what they're thinking. The issue of job creation is just a byproduct of the incident.